So I'm going to do something a little different here. I'm going to tease to the very end of the show. Ooh. To extra innings and a Whoa. Little GOT recap. Folks, you're going to want to stick around for that.
Got.
A little got. So what do you think?
Wait, that's the cold open?
That's the cold open.
I guess winter is coming.
You know, I figured most people don't, you know, stay to the end, except for those pop culture fans. So right. Now you have a reason. You get to find out what we think, because our opinions yeah. are so important.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen Game of Thrones finale or the whole show, now's the time. Pause the podcast, binge watch the entire 8 seasons. Then unpause the podcast, and then we're going to discuss the
get all caught
the
up.
Finale and the show in general, and
everything you've ever thought you would want to hear about Game of Thrones that you
but
haven't
after
heard
the baseball,
yeah, that you haven't yet heard on social media, or you know, the
right.
the sky is falling, you know, type
or
of,
you probably have heard on social media,
and to
and
the
we
point
might just
like,
regurgitate a lot of opinions that other people have. Frankly,
and chances are pretty good you'll. Won't want to watch the show if you've never watched it, because you're like, what a bunch of whiners out there. Shut yeah. up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. But this is episode 104 of Foul Territory. I'm John Sumple. He's Jed Rigney.
I am Jed Rigney.
And this is the, what is this one? This one is the Blazing Saddles edition of Foul Territory.
Great movie.
Great movie. Number 4 on the IMD list. Coinciding with the 104 episode, just in case you missed out on, you know, what we did for the first 100 episodes,
right.
We're starting a new counting convention and using the top 100 comedies according to IMDb.
Great movie.
Yeah, so, you know,
just still holds up.
It, you know, I remember seeing that when it came out in 1974, I believe it was, and
yes.
Absolutely hysterical.
Yes, you went down to the picture show, John.
Went down to the picture show with my dad, and because it was R rated, you know, my
okay.
dad was a huge Mel Brooks fan, so I had to go, you know, with my dad to see it. And I don't think I've ever seen my father laugh harder than I did at that movie.
Oh, that's
it was
nice.
Really good. Good times. So just a quick recap: number 1 was Some Like It Hot, 2 Caddyshack, 3 Airplane, and 4 Blazing Saddles.
I mean, the thing about, and we've got 2 parody films in the top 4 there,
mm-hmm.
with Airplane and Blazing Saddles. The thing about a good parody is the person making it has to truly love the genre.
Because
mm-hmm. the only way you can really make fun of someone, it's like with Friends, right? Like Friends, not the show Friends. I mean, maybe the show of Friends too, but like when you take the piss out of them, like the best part of being Friends is like, you know, all the little things that they do that's weird, and
right.
it's all a big laugh, and you can have a laugh about it. And so if you love Western films and you go out there and you try to make a parody of it, you're gonna know all the little things, like, yeah, I love Westerns, but it also has these mistakes or these plot things that are always goofy, mm-hmm. or it has these things that are silly that, you know, we can make fun of. And you know, that's, you have that insight, the deep insight into the genre, where then if you don't really care about it and you're just trying to make fun of something,
right.
then it just comes across as either unfunny or mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's a writing tip on foulterritory.com.
From a comedy pro, Jed Rigney.
I am a professional comedy.
You live it, right? Every day.
You know what? It's actually true.
So let's get into some baseball.
I'm here for it, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what the kids say now. They say, I'm here for it.
Oh,
I'm here for this.
So you're on fleek?
I am on fleek.
I don't even know what
goals.
That means, but I've heard that.
Goals okay. AF, John.
Are you adulting?
I am not adulting. But that's mainly because of the restraining order.
Okay. So Justin Verlander had a no-hitter broken up this week. Jose Abreu? I don't know the details, so you're going to have to.
Yeah, so Verlander's cruising along, and you know, whatever, it's not a no-hitter if there's a hit, right? And of
Correct.
Course, but it's like, I just thought it was so interesting, because in this day and age where you have like so many home runs being hit, and of course Verlander loses his no-hitter and shutout, of course, to a home run, And that was it. That was the only hit.
That was the only hit, and hopefully they won.
They did win.
Okay.
The Astros did win. But Verlander is still, he's an interesting free agent at the end of the year because, I mean, can he really keep this up?
No.
Remember like 3 years ago, he was not that good.
No.
And then went to Houston. Of course, Houston teaches them a couple of little tricks.
Right,
you know,
the gurus of pitching.
I'm just saying they have a way. I'm not saying it's necessarily cheating. Trevor Bauer is, but I'm not saying it.
Yeah, we're like we said last week, we're hoping Felix Hernandez gets traded to the Astros to revitalize his career.
Or at least to their AAA team.
Yeah, because they'll get, I mean, he's only 34, so they'll get a good three, you know, Verlander's 37, right? So around the same time that he came over.
Boy,
to
I tell you, that Astros team, sheesh.
Just keep on winning.
Loaded.
Yeah.
Loaded. And in the minor leagues, they've got Yordan Alvarez, who's batting 400 and an OPS of like 1,500. And now Kyle Tucker, the last month, has been just as good. After starting off a little slow, he's like got his swing back and he's crushing homers. And these are like two of the top 10 hitting prospects in baseball.
And I would guarantee you that the Astros will be in the market for another pitcher, you know, come the trade deadline. And they've got the assets to pull that off easily.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to
see. What if they did like a Syndergaard?
Oof, that would.
Because the Mets are such a mess right now. Like they're.
Although Callaway did get a vote of confidence from Brody. And Wagner.
I don't think they can trade. I don't think the Mets can dismantle. But I don't know what else.
Brody was all in. He said we're going to be competitive, and you know, kind of on paper, they looked like they could if they're pitching.
Yeah.
So DeGrom starts out like a house of fire and then gets hurt.
Yeah.
And then Syndergaard has been all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a 4 ERA and a. It's not been that great.
No.
Not that great.
Yeah, but then it would be awesome for the Astros to go after him in a down cycle and get him for much less than they would have to pay for.
Oh, I think you're paying full price for Syndergaard.
Are you?
I think if the Mets give up Syndergaard, they have to trade him away basically as if he is at his
best
prime. Otherwise, you just hang on to him. Like you'd never get over like that. He would lose the GM would lose his job over that. Not like not this year, but it would be that thing that they look back on and go like, yeah, I remember he also traded Syndergaard, and then he went to the Astros and became a Cy Young winner.
Right, because they fixed him.
Yeah,
yeah, and he's young, so they would definitely have a long term chance for the Met fans to go like, another Nolan Ryan scenario.
Yeah, like the Astros don't have the best farm system; they just have like. The best, like, near to, you know, to the majors, I think. Because if you look at, like, the starting pitching they have with Forrest Whitley, he's probably a top pitcher he's struggling a little bit this year, top pitcher. They brought up Corbin Martin. He was great in his first start, a little rough against the Red Sox, but, like, it's the Red Sox, who are now kind of back on track.
Back on track.
Like, this is just a stacked team, and they got Framber Valdez or something like that. And they got all these guys that have to shove in the bullpen because there's just no room for them in the starting rotation. Anyway, it's a stacked team. And again, maybe 3 years from now, the minor league system goes the Cubs route and there's nothing left. But for right now, it is loaded.
But their big challenge is going to be is when are they going to be able to afford to pay everybody, all these young guys, when they hit their money cycle. And will the cupboards be bare by then? Not bare.
Yeah.
But they'll be.
I mean, it's.
They're gonna lose pieces, that's for sure.
Yeah. I do feel bad for guys like Kyle Tucker and whatever. Like, if Kyle Tucker was on 27, 26 other teams in the league, he'd be up in the majors working it out.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But he's on the Astros.
Yeah, so he gets a cup of coffee every now and then. He's not a full-time starter. You know, it's one of those things.
I think he's in behind Yordan Alvarez now on the call-up chart. I think Yordan Alvarez can play first base, and that's the one area of the offense that's doing that great.
So maybe he's the piece for Syndergaard. Maybe.
I'm just saying you could get a ton. Then the question is like, okay, well then – where are you a year from now? Where are you two years from now? I don't know. It's a good position for the company to be in. Yeah. Did I just say company? It's good a good company. Position for the team to be in, which is a company.
It is.
And a registered trademark. Of blah, 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 blah. Anyway. Right.
It's a business. Yeah. Don't you forget it. So the Orioles became the fastest team in the history of Major League Baseball to give up 100 home runs. That's not a very good record to hold.
No, and I do believe they will set the record this year. They have that perfect storm of terrible starting pitching, terrible bullpen, and whatever decent things they have in the bullpen, they're going to trade, and possibly even in the rotation. And they're just going to—it's just going to be bad. I mean, most of the damage is being done by Gleyber Torres from the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 10 home runs against them, 4 multi-home run games against the Orioles. But also, Orioles are giving up home runs to everyone. It's not like, wow, Gleyber Torres really has them figured out. It's like, no, the league has them figured out because they're bad.
And I heard something about, I didn't see it, but I heard that the announcers for the Orioles were kind of fed up with Torres.
Yeah,
kind of...
it was so funny. These clips were going around the internets, and it was just the announcers just so frustrated. And like, you know, another home run for Gleyber Torres. Like, don't pitch to him.
Yeah, he's got their number, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, so everybody gets to feast on the Orioles this year.
And next, honestly, yeah. it's gonna be a rough go for them for the next couple of years. But you know they have some hitters coming soon. You know they've got Yusnel Diaz, DJ Stewart, who I love. I know there's a lot of the prospect guys don't like him because his defense isn't that amazing, but he is such a good hitter. He's mashing in AAA right now. If he's available in your leagues, in your keeper leagues, get him. If he's available. He will be available in your redraft fantasy baseball leagues. Keep an eye. 12 team and up. Keep an eye because this guy could come up. Camden Yards in the summer is a bandbox, and the guy raked last year. He's going to rake again. I love his bat. I love his bat a lot.
There you have it, folks. There's your tip of the week, all you fantasy baseball players.
Yeah. And they got Austin Hayes. Trumbo's coming back. Like, they're going to be a softball team, basically. Mm-hmm. And wow. Then they just have to find a way to get some starting pitching. Though they do have a couple of good, like, I would say top 100 pitchers coming. D.L. Hall and then, I don't remember the other guy's name. It's one of those names where it's just like, how do you pronounce that? So we're going to call him Joe, how do you pronounce that? So you got D.L. Hall and Joe, how do you pronounce that, coming. And so their pieces are starting to line up, but they need to have a good draft this year. And have that turn into something as soon as maybe next year or the year after. It's a long process for the Orioles.
So how about this scoreless streak for, I always stumble over his name, Hyunjin Ryu.
Hyunjin Ryu, yeah.
Pretty impressive for someone who a lot of people were, I want to say they wrote him off, but it's like, consistent. You know, seems to be a lot of injuries.
Well, the injuries, right?
Yeah.
A lot of injuries.
But he's dominating.
He's dominating. 31 innings. He's, of course, by the time people are listening to this, like maybe he's given up runs because whatever.
Or maybe he's chasing down Oral Hershiser's record.
Right.
Maybe.
Who was before chasing down Drysdale, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a Dodgers thing.
Dodgers scoreless streaks, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, he's healthy, and this is why the Dodgers put the qualifying offer on him last year because they did not want to lose this guy, and we're like, what's worth the 18 mil or 17, 8, you know, to get this guy for the 1 year. If he doesn't, you know, if he rejects it? No, if he accepts it, it's worth it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're right. He was absolutely worth it. He was worth every gosh darn penny. He stays healthy. You know, he's a very Maddox-y type pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And, a lot of precision, but with a little speed and deception. It's like a really great combination. And he's shown it before, and then he would just go like on a 5-game run, and then he's out with a groin injury.
And he's the number 4 starter in that rotation, too. Not bad. Not bad, Dodgers. So how about the Yankees? Keep on winning despite,
with that trash team they're putting out there with like all these rejects and AAA players. But
players are on the mend, some.
On the mend.
Yeah.
We had 3 listed here, right? 4? Yeah, we had Gregorius, Judge, and Stanton, and then Stanton's off the mend now. He's
back in the Jacoby hole.
Calf. He's back in the he's in the Jacoby's clubhouse.
So Jacoby is making progress. Is he? Is he? He's
no.
just kicking back. He's in the dugout, spitting sunflower seeds.
I don't even
gum.
Know that they're even trying to fix him at this point.
Yeah, it's just a money thing right now.
Yeah, they're doing the bare minimum for the insurance.
Insurance, yeah. It's like, yeah, we'll, like to come it'll by be over soon, it Jacoby. It'll be over soon. But the, yeah, you must be happy that the Red Sox have turned the tables.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see JD Martinez's back get sorted out or whatever it is that he's dealing with. But yeah, Mookie's hitting well again, and boy, this Michael Chavis has been a revelation.
Yeah, he's been the biggest bright spot for sure.
I will say I'm a little superstitious about Red Sox players on my fantasy teams, which is why I haven't picked him up anywhere, because I have sort of had this thing of like, well, I would rather them do well and not be on my team, on my fantasy baseball team, than do poorly and be on my fantasy baseball team. So it's like becomes this double whammy of awfulness. So it's just like, well, he's succeeding. Someone else is getting his production. That's fine. He's succeeding for his real life team, and that's all that matters. But I sure wish I'd picked him up. There's one league in particular I really could use all those home runs. Right. He's got like 10 home runs.
Right. Well, how about another? It's not on the list, but how about Hunter Pence?
That is a thing I cannot believe.
Well, he went down to Mexico and said he was going to retool his swing.
Hey-o.
and he did.
Yeah.
It's actually quite an amazing story that really no one's talking about, which is a little bit surprising.
I think people just don't believe it. I think people just think the wheels are going to fall off the cart.
But he's hitting for power.
He's got his hard hit rate is really high. His strikeouts are in good place. Like all the underlying numbers show that it's not a fluke, but I think just everyone thinks it's a fluke.
Yeah.
Plus Texas. So last year there was no better offensive place to play than Texas, including Coors Field.
So how about the Mets? You know, the dumpster fire continues. Did they put that out
it's
last
amazing.
Year? Or is it still burning?
You know what? New dumpster, same fire.
What a disaster. So you got Cano, who they picked up a huge salary and gave up quite a bit to get him.
Yeah.
And he's done nothing except for get hurt.
Well, he's been a little underperforming, right? And then he would show signs of coming out of it and then start to slump again. And I really thought it was a good pickup for the Mets because they were basically got him for his contract, like to agree to pay that all that money, which is too much money for him. I mean, not too much money for him. Like, I'm sure it's plenty for him. He doesn't mind at all. But in terms of what he should be paid. But, you know, the smart move by the Mariners to get out from under that, even though it cost them Edwin Diaz. Mm-hmm. But he just, you know, he for like a week, he was getting, you know, you know, people were talking trash about him because he wasn't legging out ground balls. And so then there were a couple of double plays that maybe he could have beat out if he had hustled.
But he never has his entire career. He's not a hustler at all.
I know, right? It's like, so he should stop being Robinson Cano is what you're saying?
Right.
So then the other day, yesterday, he actually tries to beat out a ground ball and then pulls his quad and is now on the injured list.
So he's like, see, I told you. This is my game.
I warned you.
I talked to Manny Machado. He said, it's all your fault. You should have stuck with the plan. Now, and then you have Cespedes fractures his ankle. He's got he's two heels being, you know, surgery last year and recovering. And he's down on the farm at his Florida ranch. And I didn't see how he did it. Was there an explanation as to how?
Well, here's the thing. Do you remember the Jeff Kent story?
Uh-huh. Where he wasn't riding motorcycles or four-wheelers?
Right, where he fell off of his truck while he was washing it or whatever his story wound up being. So the story right now is that it wasn't horseback riding and it wasn't an ATV. It was he stepped into a hole.
Oh. That'll happen on a ranch. I could see that.
It can happen, John. Yeah. It is possible that that's. But if I were to actually guess, I would say it probably wasn't an accident.
No, and he's a guy
young
that plays
guy,
golf,
youngish, right?
He plays golf every day, doesn't he? Even with the injuries, right?
Hey, I'm just saying. Think about it though. This guy grew up in Cuba,
living the dream. Now
and is now has a ranch in Florida where he's basically playing golf every day. And I love America. I think it's amazing. That's all I have to say about that. I just think it's amazing.
So tell me a little bit about this Cubs Nationals protest. Disconnected
from Sean Doolittle. And I don't know if I've noticed this before, but Sean Doolittle, who's the closer for the Nationals, he was the one traded from the A's. Mm-hmm. And he has like a little bit of a toe tap on his delivery. And I'd never really noticed that before, but it's a little bit illegal looking.
Okay.
Like a little bit, because you're not allowed to plant your foot again. You're not really supposed to touch the ground before you then throw the ball and then touch the ground.
Carter Capps got away with it. He had the weirdest.
But then they had to change that rule for him.
Right.
Right. Because he was doing whatever. And then, so apparently the Cubs got busted for on the Cubs. So then the Cubs turned around and were like, well, look at Sean Doolittle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Carl Edwards. Carl Edwards has a little bit of a, it looked like his foot was, again, more so than Doolittle, was that Edwards looked like his foot was actually touching the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, so then the Cubs were talking about, oh, we're going to continue the game under protest and blah, blah, blah. And then they just wound up not filing a protest. And then it was like, I think, you know, Doolittle said afterwards, it was just like, it's just Joe Maddon trying to get it, you know, get a rise out of me while I'm in the game. He's not whatever. And maybe that's what it was. And it probably was that. But if you've got a slightly illegal move, you got to, you know, if you're using pine tar on your hat and someone busts you for pine tar on your hat, you can't exactly be surprised. So.
Yeah. But fixing a motion for a pitcher is a big deal.
Yeah.
Changing that up is a big deal.
I'd never noticed it before until.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at it.
I don't even know if it's new or. But I do know it's one of those things where it can be a tool for the pitcher, but it can also be a tool to distract the hitter because you can change the timing on the tap.
Because
you can make it like, oh, it's tap and then throw, or it's tap throw.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the batter looks at the tap and thinks he's going to time it off the tap.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Anyway, from my baseball experience, John.
Okay. You timed the tap well in your day?
John, if a pitcher had a tap, that was just a guaranteed strikeout for me. If a pitcher had any sort of off-speed, any sort of curve, I could not hit a slider to save my life, John.
Yeah, I had trouble.
But you know what? You groove a fastball to me.
Same here.
Last hit I ever got in baseball, in competitive baseball, was a triple off of a grooved fastball, right? It was my last at bat in the last game of the season, grooved right down the middle. And it was just like, it was one of the things where your eyes just get all big, like, yes, that's the one.
And
I just absolutely crushed it. Just crushed it.
A memorable moment in the
in
Jed Rigney's career?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Awesome. So Ian Kinsler, I didn't hear about this one too. So was it a post game thing or
the struggling Ian Kinsler got a walk off hit or a lead taking home run or something like that, and as he crossed the plate, extended both of his middle fingers outwards towards the home crowd, used the F word.
The what word?
The F word.
Wow. And this was
not
captured?
Fart, not foul ball, not foulterritory.com. The other F word.
And this was at a home game?
Yes.
Wow.
But he's been struggling, right? So it's a little like, people have been starting to get the boo birds are out. And he's like, I'll show you guys. Like, actually, Ian, what you could do is do this on a regular basis. That would be really showing them.
So he pumped up his teammates in the process. That was his defense.
Well, that's what he was claiming. He was trying to get everyone fired up. It was like, yeah, is that what you were doing?
A big F you to everybody.
Like you were flipping the bird at the audience.
A big F you to the whole crowd. That's pumping the team up.
Yeah,
that'll work. I can't.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing, John. You've done this. You worked on a project with other people.
Sure.
Nothing gets people fired up for doing a great job and really succeeding like just giving them double birds and just unleashing F-bombs at them.
There you go.
Like, that's what inspiring. Gets people fired up. They're like, yeah, I want to work with this guy forever.
Well, I wonder what the next at-bat was like. Did the crowd give it to him? Do you know?
You know, I don't know, actually. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have
to look that
up. That's a great Padres question.
Good
Padres fans that are listening. Call
in.
Operators are standing by. Call 1-800-FOUL-TERRITORY-PODCAST.com. 420-69.
So there was a rare oddity in the meteorological world in Southern California, an actual rainout for an Angels game.
That's right. A rainout in, I don't want to say Los Angeles, because I will say at game time, there was no rain in Los Angeles, John. I'm here. I know.
You would know.
But down in Anaheim, which is where the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim reside, there was rain. And they got a rainout in Southern California in May, John.
That's nuts. It never rains in Southern California. Glenn Campbell told us so.
I mean, it's basically the day after tomorrow.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
What are Los Angelinos doing, but what are SoCalians doing?
I remember there was a great tweet from one of my favorite comedians, Rob Hubel. He said, rain in Los Angeles is just like every other town, except it's like there are zombies with laser eyes.
Don't know what to do. Don't know how to handle it.
People just don't, they go crazy. They're like, we're going to cancel this baseball game.
Yeah, no fair. Can't do
and
this.
To be fair to the people of Los Angeles, the weather people had no idea what was happening. All day it was like listed on the weather apps and the weather channel as partly cloudy. And then the next thing, there's this torrential downpour. And then it's like, well, don't worry. And then the app says, no, it's just rain for like the next 15 or 20 minutes and then it'll all clear up and be sunny. And like, no, it rained for 5 hours, dude. Get it together.
That's not good. So you're now in Southern California, you've relocated.
Permanent, man. Semi-permanent.
Semi-permanent. Keeping options open for anywhere.
Yeah.
Have job, will travel.
Yeah.
But your only new location where you're going to be living is only, 15 minutes from Dodger Stadium.
That's true. No, I've already got a couple of guys who are trying to book games with me and stuff. It's going to be great.
That's awesome.
It's going to be great. I'm excited to explore that aspect of being back in Los Angeles. Because the last time I was here, it was all work. And I didn't really have time to do anything.
And you had a chance to go to one of the playoff games, too. Or the World Series games.
Yeah, the World Series games. Yeah, I was in town for, a wedding, right? Or was it? No, not a wedding. For a writing project. And yeah, and then I had a chance to. And I just couldn't bring myself to go. Because who do I root for? Red Sox?
Right.
Dodgers. I want the Red Sox to win, but then they've already won so many, and then, to have to deal with Yankee fans gloating about the Red Sox losing, and then if the Dodgers lose, they've already lost a few, and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I just couldn't do it.
So you're gonna get
also it was like $300.
Dodger Blue Fever. Do you have it?
I mean, I think a lot of people say the Astros are the best team in baseball. I think the Dodgers are the best team in baseball.
Could be a showdown again, a repeat.
Yeah. I do think the Dodgers are the best team in baseball. So I think, and funny enough, the Dodgers also have the same farm system problem that the Astros have. They just are stacked up.
I just feel like they're more like the Buffalo Bills. The Dodgers.
The Dodgers?
Yeah, I think.
How dare you, John?
I just have that feeling.
Shut your mouth. Right here, right now, shut your mouth.
So one of my favorite stories.
Cruel,
though,
John. Cruel.
One of my favorite stories of the year is this Scott Boras client. Basically, speaking of FUs, big FU to MLB baseball. It's like, we're going to take our game over to Japan.
Carter Stewart.
Carter Stewart, yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting story because it could change the path to the Major League Baseball for a lot of younger stars or younger, I would say, college athletes.
Right. Well, here's the thing. He was a first-round pick last year, And then the Braves, right? Mm-hmm. I think they picked him.
Yep.
They thought that they'd discovered some injury. And I'm not saying they were wrong, and I'm not saying they made it up, but they found an injury or a weakness or whatever. And we're like, no, you're injured. We're not signing you to a big deal. And he's like, no, I'm not injured. And he's going to go he's signing with, which team is it? We have it written.
It's the Fukuoka? Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks.
Yeah.
Way to put in a plug.
Who's one of the best
SoftBank
teams over there?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. SoftBank, for all your Hawk banking needs. Does your Hawk need a bank? Do you need a bank for your Hawk? Go to Fukuoka SoftBank.
Yeah, I can't wait until they start calling them the Seattle Amazon Mariners.
You know what? I'm here for it. If it's money,
it's going to happen eventually.
Look, they're already going to start doing the decals,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Look, I don't mind. Patches. Here's the thing. It's capitalism.
Yeah. The players should be able to wear, they should get their endorsements and, wear their Under Armour patch or their Nike patch on their uniforms, just like tennis players do it. They wear the brands that
they sponsor. If you can find a way to get more money to minor leaguers and boost up the middle class in MLB, I don't care if they're walking around wearing capes for advertisement. I don't care about the length of the games, because if you change a game from 3 hours and 4 minutes to 3 hours and 1 minute, like, no one cares.
Right.
Baseball is baseball. But you hear these stories about these minor leaguers who are making $1,500 a month.
Yeah, it's not good.
Oh.
Riding in buses for 8 hours for a game series.
And it's like, I understand that team that they're on is not making a lot of money, but those teams are all subsidized,
right,
man.
Yep.
It's a farm system.
Money does trickle down.
If you're out in
when
a
it's
farm,
needed.
If you have a farm in, whether it's in Florida and you're Jonas Cespedes and you've got a hole that you're stepping in, or if you've got a marijuana farm down in Mexico, like my co-host, John Sumple, it's a farm system. You plant things. You spend the money on the things to plant, and you grow them.
Right. And you make money.
You cheap out, you're going to get bugs and holes in the ground that you step in and break your ankle.
Right.
Or riding an ATV. Who knows?
Allegedly.
Washing Jeff Kent's truck. Jonas Cespedes had Jeff Kent over to his farm. Was like, hey, let me help you wash that truck.
Wink, wink. So this story here is, I don't know anything about this one either. This is the show where John knows nothing that's going on in the world of baseball. But someone took a picture of Alex Rodriguez taking a dump.
Yes. So Alex Rodriguez has a very nice New York apartment, as you might imagine.
I would assume.
That he shares with his lady partner.
His fiance.
Jennifer Lopez.
Yes,
his fiance. I saw a great tweet from one of our writers on the site. It was basically like, Alex Rodriguez spends 3 hours each game trying to convince everybody that he's a normal human. And you know what? I will say one thing I dislike about... I don't like the dynamic that he creates with the I can't remember. I always forget her name. What's her name?
Maria Fernandez or something like that?
She's,
I don't know.
She's great. She's such
awesome.
A great announcer.
She's really good.
And I'm so like, I don't want women in the announcing booth, but she's great. She makes me reconsider that thought. But I will say, I don't know if she like is flirting with him. But she's so much more like giggly with him. That's
rumors.
And that's where I start. I'm just saying, look, and we know A-Rod's banging other chicks. Just ask Jose Canseco. He knows.
He knows all. And you cannot say no to Jose because he's been right before.
He was right. And remember, he's talking. Have you seen his stuff about aliens, by the way? John, you do the alien documentaries,
I
right?
I have not seen. I've heard.
You need to look up Jose Canseco's alien theories. They're pretty, even for alien theories, they're pretty out there.
Maybe we should interview him for our next film, which I'll be shooting next week in LA, New Mexico, and Arizona, and Pennsylvania.
Right.
So there
that's
you
right.
go.
So, hey, listeners. If you're into alien stuff and come on, at least a third of you are, because it's a really fascinating subject, go on to Netflix, check out Extraordinary, the Stan Romanek story. It will break your brain. Even if you're not a full believer, fine, it'll still half break your brain. But if you're a full believer, it's like really trippy, cool stuff. And John, if you don't mind me saying, very well presented and very presented in that perfect sort of gradual increase of like, I don't want to say craziness, but just like, it's just so unreal what's mm-hmm. presented. Mm-hmm. But it's presented in such a way that you really get like, oh, okay, this could actually have happened. I think this might have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have our second film will be coming out in September. And you had a chance to see that.
Yeah. That's the hashtag MeTooFO.
We may have to use that. Oh, folks, if you don't know, the story is about hybridization programs and women who have had unexplained pregnancies because they've been, let's lack of a better word, abused by those from other planets.
And I love the way that you present that stuff too, because it's very your presentation is very neutral. Because mm-hmm. Obviously these people feel very strongly about it, and there's a certain degree to which you watch some of them and you're like, well, this is their shtick. Mm-hmm. But then there's other people where it's like, well, clearly this is like not just a shtick. This is not a con. This is something that's actually like wrecked their lives.
Right. And that's definitely what we wanted to get across.
And how true or not it really is, or whatever,
it's true to them.
Facts, it's true to them, and it's something that they're dealing with. And yeah. Anytime you can sort of, you know, tap into the emotional struggles of other people, it's interesting filmmaking.
Yeah. So I appreciate it. Thank you. So folks, check it out when it comes out.
Yeah.
September 3rd. And I'll do a shameless plug, j3films.com. You can find out anything you want to find out about both of those films are on the site. So let's get back to baseball.
We were in baseball with Jose Canseco, and this photo. Now, the photo was not taken by aliens.
Was taken by Jose Canseco?
I wouldn't be surprised if he put him up to it. They're speculating. So anyway, apparently A-Rod likes to do his business with the window open, and who doesn't? Get a little light in there, get a little air.
So a neighbor
someone
did?
Took a photo from across the like across the street, right? Like it's a high rise, right?
Yeah, so looking
it's
just down
across the street, and they think that it's a hedge fund. Someone in one of the hedge funds across the street took the picture. Anyway, the newspapers did not run the photo.
Hmm.
So if you're wondering what's the line of demarcation?
TMZ.
That's the line.
TMZ.
That's the line of where the New York Post is like, yeah, that's even a little beneath us.
Wow.
It's A-Rod taking a poop.
Well, check it out, folks. I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
Yeah. Probably.
So I'm really excited about Starting Nine this week.
Oh, okay.
Love the John Wick films. The third one's out. I'm sure the body count is high because it was in the first two.
Super high.
Have you seen it yet?
It's not. I haven't seen it yet, but I will say we were not super excited about seeing it in the theater. But because the second one was a little eh. But there, all we've heard from people we trust is that the third one is great.
Awesome. Yeah, I've heard great things about it too. So looking forward to seeing that one.
Yeah.
So in honor of John Wick 3, the third installment, 9 players with Keanu Reeves movie title names.
Yes.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Brad Point Brock.
Okay. Great
film. Point Break, Brad Brock. I am an FBI agent.
Dude.
Okay, Shinsu, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
He's 2 weeks in a row, I think. 2 or 3, maybe. 2 weeks.
Yeah, he gets in there a lot.
He's a lot. It's just fun.
Fits well.
It's always fun.
And the best line from that, of course, is, strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Steven the Matz Ricks.
Okay.
Steven Matz and
the
Matz Ricks. Yeah. Here we go. John Wick. Here we go. Troy to John Wicksky.
Good.
Speedro Alvarez.
Speedro. That's a good one.
Yeah.
These nicknames could stick, you know. Start calling you Speedro.
Yeah, I don't know if Pedro Alvarez is going to get... Wait a minute, is he even still in the league? Oh, crap. Speedro Sandoval.
Okay. Speedro Sandoval.
But he couldn't be Speedro. That's neither Pedro Alvarez nor Pedro Sandoval.
No. I guess you
can be considered Speedro.
Speedro Martinez when he was pitching.
Right.
Yeah, it worked.
All right, here we go. Constantin Hernandez.
I just can't get out this picture out of my head of people being called Speedro and Constantin.
I actually like that movie, Constantine.
I did too.
It didn't do that well, but I like that movie. Rafael Devers Advocate.
Okay. Yes.
With
Al Pacino.
What's his name? Al Pacino and
Charlize Theron.
Solid. Weird.
Yeah. It was good. Kinda,
whatever. Yeah. Justin Riverlander's Edge.
Good movie. Really good.
That was one of his first.
Mm-hmm.
One of his first. Marcus the Replace Simeon. Wait, let me do that again. Marcus the Replace Simeon.
Okay, very good. Mince. Another good movie. Al Pacino. Mince.
I need to replace Simeons. No, that's Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman. Yeah, I'm thinking of the other one.
Yeah, Any Given Sunday.
Right.
Yeah. And that would be Manny Given Sunday Machado, but that's not a...
That works too. Off the top of your head, right there, bam. Yeah.
Sandy Leone, Private Idaho.
Leone, Private Idaho.
Yeah, that works, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Narcolepsy has never been featured better in a film.
Never before has narcolepsy been so well presented. Last one, Luis, The Day the Earth Stood, Castillo.
Oh, last but not least, but the best. Save the best for last. Yeah. Those are great. Love them. Love them. Can't wait to see that movie, though. I'm a huge Keanu fan because he is what he is, and it works.
Here's the thing. I hate anything he does where he
tries.
Is like
tries
like
not trying to be Keanu, to, right?
Exactly. Like The Lake House.
Right. Yeah.
We're writing letters to each other across time.
Yeah.
And he's like, whoa, I got a letter at the lake house. Whoa. Like,
just
no,
Keanu.
And then, and just when you thought, like, you know what, he's just going to go away. Then he does Speed, and you're like, no, yes, I want Speed. Right. Okay, good. I want The Matrix.
Give me The Matrix.
Yes.
More. And then John Wick. Boom.
And then John Wick, and here he is again.
Laughing all the way to the bank.
And also, might I add, the guy's a gosh darn folk hero in real life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's a giver.
Story after story about how amazing this guy is.
Yeah. He is pretty, and they're making a remake of Bill and Ted, aren't they?
There's a sequel.
Sequel.
They're doing a Bill and Ted Face the Music,
and Bill and Ted are back. I can see Keanu, you know, delivering. I don't know about the other guy,
Alex Winter.
Yeah.
Well, the cool thing is that he was able to get off work from the car wash that he was at.
He didn't parlay Bill and Ted into big riches by any means.
No, he did not. Things stalled out for Alex Winter.
Yeah, he probably was like...
I think he got behind the camera a little bit at some point. I seem to recall.
He probably called up Keanu and said, hey, man, could you throw me a bone? Can we just make a sequel and, you know, 30 years later, see what happens?
It's like the car wash is making me work double shifts. I can't do it anymore, Keanu. And he's like, all right, well, let's do another Bill and Ted's.
Okay, let's move on to Extra Innings, the little teaser at the beginning. I'm sure you've all hung in there through all the baseball, through the starting nine, and now you're ready for Extra
And the
innings.
Aliens.
And the aliens. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the Bruins and the Blues Stanley Cup Finals.
Yes.
So the Bruins sweep their way in. The Blues relatively easily time with San Jose. What do you think?
Yes, it didn't seem to be in doubt, really, with San Jose.
No. It was both teams kind of made it there easily.
Don't be surprised if you see the refs manipulate this into, like, close games, because on its face,
no one's going to watch it.
Admittedly, even as a Boston fan, this does not seem like a real compeller.
Epic. No.
Doesn't feel like a thing. Like, I mean, hockey fans, I'm sure, will watch, but, like, who are, like, the guys that we need to watch? And, like, you can't think of any.
And I think because the first two rounds had, half a dozen game sevens in the first two rounds, which knocked out a whole bunch of the favorites, this has kind of slowly whittle down to, oh, that's who's in the finals.
Yeah.
But the Bruins carry a lot of cachet into that too. So that definitely makes it for an interesting series. And Blues, long suffering Blues fans, this is big, huge in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, for Boston fans, finally a break with one of their professional franchises. Right. Just
see if we can hold three titles.
I mean, it's
at the
been
same
weeks,
time.
John. It's been weeks.
Yeah. And the Celtics unfortunately bowed out. But if the Celtics, imagine if they held all four titles at the same time. I think the universe would stop. It would end.
It just would. I don't even know what, as a Boston fan myself, I don't even know what to do with that.
Yeah, it's too much. Too much.
It just feels like too much, you know, like the Super Bowl, the World Series, possibly the Stanley Cup here. Like, man.
But I'm going to go Bruins in six.
I mean, it does seem like the Bruins are going to win this one. I know I'm being a homer, but it just also just seems maybe the Blues can catch them, you know, off because they've been rested longer. I don't know, but always felt like in hockey that the rest actually helped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get heal up a little
more
bit,
so than any other sport. Mm-hmm. That the time to rest from all of the gruel and the cruel grinding gruel. John, it's the end of the podcast, and the caffeine is wearing off.
Okay, so the Warriors cakewalk sweep the Portland Trailblazers.
Who apparently used up all their mojo in the previous round.
But the final game, down 17 points in the third, like 4 minutes left in the third period, and the Warriors come back and seal the deal. Without KD. So they're
without
dominating.
KD.
You know.
Crazy.
Yeah, so KD is probably like, yeah, I needed those four games off. You know, thanks for making it.
But can we also say that the Warriors never needed KD?
They never did.
And him going there was like just to get a championship.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them break this up a little bit and spread some of the wealth around.
Well,
like, how many championships do you need?
Yeah, he's gone. He'll be playing for the Knicks next year. So we'll.
I mean, I'm still trying to keep my Knicks fandom. I told you about this, right?
Sure.
I'm trying so hard, and they got screwed in the draft, and the Lakers didn't. So crazy. Lakers jump up 9 slots.
Yeah, how did that happen? That was awesome for them.
And then the Knicks drop down to 3 or whatever, which is not terrible, but it's not 1, is it?
No.
It's not Zion.
No, that's a franchise changer right there.
Yeah. Such a huge difference. But I mean, you know, it's funny. I've talked about with some friends about doing a fantasy basketball
podcast.
Keeper league, like a keeper league.
Oh, okay.
Not a podcast. No, I don't know enough about basketball to do a full podcast. But trying to do a fantasy basketball keeper league. And really, like, the hardest thing to address is, like, how do you handle new players, like rookie players coming into the league? Like, how do you handle getting those onto teams correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so, like, the difference between 1 and 3 and 3 and 10 is just so huge.
Yeah, yeah. There's no guarantees after the usually top 3 or 4 picks.
Yeah.
So the other side of the equation, Bucks-Raptors knotted up at 2-2, which is a bit of a surprise. If there was any team that was going to sweep, I thought for sure it was going to be the Bucks. So they, you know, dominated the first two games and had a chance with an overtime loss to go up 3-0, and then boom, all of a sudden it's even. A little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, and if I had to guess, I would say the Bucks are the toughest challenge for the Warriors.
Absolutely.
Like, maybe they can get it out to 6 games, and I mean, you know, whatever they can, you never know with sports, but it just, this all feels like one of those foregone conclusions.
Yeah,
and
especially after the sweep, you know, it was kind of like, wow, they really don't need KD. Not to say that they, you know, obviously big part of the team and win with him, but
no, they don't need him.
Don't need him.
They're a great team without him. That's why it was always so weird that he joined them. Like,
well, it's like LeBron James factor too. When LeBron James left, you know, the Heat, you know, obviously they didn't win again, but Dwayne Wade was capable of carrying that team, you know, during those 4 seasons, and he took a back seat, and Steph Curry took a back seat. But when KD goes down, Steph steps up and has been dominant again.
Would you say that he steps up?
He steps up. He steps up his game just a tad. So let's move on to what everybody's been waiting for patiently.
Speaking of games.
Game of Thrones, season finale. Spoiler alert, we'll probably talk about stuff if you haven't watched it and you've you've made it all the way through to this point of the podcast. Wow. Congratulations. Thank you very much. But, yes. You know, I was a fan of the way things played out. I liked the way.
So let's talk about the season finale. And we can talk about the last two, actually, because mm-hmm. we haven't talked. I think the last time we talked was after the winter, the night.
The long night.
The long night, yeah. John's probably a bigger fan of the show than I am, as you can tell by the fact that he knows the title of the right. fourth episode.
The Long Night, the bells.
Yeah.
The Iron Throne. There you yeah. go. Boom, boom, boom.
So, okay. So, again, spoiler alerts, everyone. If you haven't seen the show or you're interested in or you haven't seen the finale, like, we're going to talk about openly. So, overall, what did you think of the finale?
The finale, I think, just tied everything up. You know, I a lot of what happened, I expected to happen. So I wasn't one of those people out there demanding that they rewrite the season and that the showrunners are idiots and they destroyed the series for me. That never happened. You know, they're the show writers, the showrunners. They get to write the show that they want. And right. I think that I felt that the last two seasons were accelerated rapidly compared to the previous six that were. Everything was developed slowly. The last two seasons, right. and especially this, the last six episodes, you know, condensed an awful lot in a short amount of right. time. But I think it still served the story. It still served the characters, but it just accelerated everything. So you had to fill in the blanks here and there, and I was okay right. with that. So I think that was the biggest criticism that I've heard. But, you know, my big thing is Jon Snow is king. Who really thought that that was going to happen? And why did you think that? Because you loved him? Because he would have probably been one of the worst leaders in the history of leadership.
Well, here's a gentleman who time and time again has made terrible decisions.
Right. And he only makes good decisions when somebody tells him what to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know some of it's the writing, but also maybe it's just, this is a guy who elected to go to the Night's Watch right. in the first season. Like, right. everyone else sent there is like sent going there in order to avoid a death sentence. Mm-hmm. He's going by choice.
Right, because he's tired of being the bastard.
Yeah, like, so I'm going to go on the Night's Watch and I'll never see you guys again. Okay, that's my choice. Little bit weird, little right. bit of a weirdo.
Set a precedent and I will right say, there.
I will say throughout the storyline, he has been very clear he does not want to be mm-mm. the king. He... As soon as he can, could abdicate it when he met with Daenerys. He was like, "Yeah, I don't care. You can have the North too, and give a crap.
Right.
I don't want to be the king." And then when it became like, "Oh, you're the actual heir.
I don't want it."
Then it was like, "Well, I don't want it. I don't right. want to be the guy.
You're and my queen.
You can, yeah, exactly, and all that stuff." Now their dynamic is a little strange because first of all, everyone knows now that she's his aunt, but also those two actors don't really have an interesting chemistry together.
No.
Whereas many of the other characters on the show, him and the girl,
Ygritte.
The Ygritte, yeah. who he winds up marrying in real life, mm-hmm. they had a really good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
But these two stars, and it happens, this is a more modern day. And of course, who knew if they were going to wind up together when they first started filming, and so they didn't bother to screen test them together.
Right.
They did not have a chemistry. So it was always very strange. Or maybe they were trying to do an acting thing because they knew where it ended up or whatever. Who knows? But here's a guy who goes through all this stuff, gets killed, is risen from the dead, blah, 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 goes and helps in his own way fight battles in his own...
Right. Battle of the Bastards,
strangely
lost.
Strangely incompetent
yeah,
way.
He lost, was about to die, got rescued.
Yeah. But look, just that opening shot, which I know was more for television, was like where him out in the field by himself with the oncoming. Like,
right.
Why are you even out there? You're the king.
Right.
You're the head of all you're the general of your army. Why are you out there?
Mm-hmm. You're supposed
risking
to be in the back.
Your life.
Right. Right.
You should. You want to fight? That's fine. But don't be out there by yourself. You will die.
Yeah.
Most likely. Maybe he just didn't want to die. My problem with his thing was, I felt like they should have written, and this is my biggest problem with the show in the last season, is not that I didn't like where everything went. I just didn't like how it was written.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that Jon Snow was basically cast off to the north. He should have chosen to go north. He should have said, "I don't want to be the king. I want to go back to..."
Mm-hmm. But it was
where
kind of,
I wanted to go.
Well, it's kind of expected, though. It was almost kind of like the Unsullied. Did they not know, and the Dothraki not know that the wall basically didn't exist anymore, and there was really no need for protecting it? And it was kind of like nudge, nudge, wink, wink. We're sending you back to the Night's Watch because you know what? There's nothing there but your dog and Tormund.
Right. And it's like, okay, so, but he's not going there by choice. And I think that's the problem that I have. I saw someone suggested, what if he had flipped it around? Like, what if he got on Drogon, the dragon? Right. By the way, need a better name for a dragon than Drogon. Like, oh, this is my
dragon
son,
Drogon.
Sohn. This is my daughter, Doder. Like, yeah, I think I get it. It's a dragon. Right. Okay. How about Gary? What about Gary the dragon?
Or Pete.
Pete's dragon. You know what? That's already taken. Oh, that's why they didn't do that.
But that was an awesome, awesome scene, though, when he fried the throne.
But what if he did it? What if Jon Snow did it?
Got on Drogon and fried
and,
the throne.
And melted the thing. Like, how does a dragon know that that piece of metal
smart
represents
dragon.
Anything? Don't give me the smart dragon BS.
Smart dragon.
It's a dragon.
How did he know that she
like
died?
Like, if he peed on it. But see, that's different. That's a connection between a mother and the daughter thing. Okay. I get or the son. I get that.
Okay.
I thought that was cool. But then, like, why is he melting this thing? He has no idea.
But then the nod, though. How about the nod before he flew off? Like, he acknowledged John. He's like, I know who you are. You know, because, you know, John, because he was able to ride the dragons, only Targaryens can ride dragons. So you knew that he was Targaryen blood.
Yes.
So the dragon was kind of like...
Well, everyone thought that the... I saw so many theories that it was going to be that Drogon actually tries to kill Jon with fire.
And it doesn't work.
And it doesn't kill him. Because
But that would have been predictable. I think that would...
Right.
You know, it was,
but what
was,
if he gets on the dragon and he melts the Iron Throne and then he goes off to the north?
On the dragon. That would have been cool.
Not necessarily on the dragon. Like, they're like, okay, well, you know, the Unsullied are like, no, you're a war criminal now. You just killed this person.
So
fair enough.
My big hole in the plot point was that Varys sends off in two episodes prior, sends off a note with a raven.
Right.
And so what where did that go? What
I think he saved those as drafts, John.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that those actually got sent. Yeah. I think he saved those as drafts.
And then he burns the one and puts the lid on it right away, which meant the fire went out immediately.
Not a good burning system.
Technique. No. It's like,
look,
that
among his other faults.
And then there's the
also,
water bottle and the coffee cup and the
I don't mind that stuff at all. Filmmaking's hard.
Yeah.
The Arya stuff I thought was good. That she's my favorite character in the
By
whole
far.
Show.
Best character.
I didn't mind the boat thing, though. I would have liked to get a little bit more in this season about her struggling with what she's going to do next. And having it be less like, okay, now this is what I'm going to do.
But after the House of Black and White, what is left for her? She's not a normal.
But I'm just saying.
She got her role in the hay. And so she can.
Which also, by the
check
way,
that off the
maybe
list.
The worst scene in the history of television.
That was pretty bad. That was.
Here's the thing. You know why it's terrible? Is because I think most people thought of Arya as like their younger sister.
Mm-hmm. And it was kind of icky.
Like, we all connect with her as like, yeah, she's our younger sister and you want her to do well and you want her to learn how to kill people silent but deadly. Like, you want that for her.
Right.
You want her to achieve her goals of murder.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, no one wants to watch their sister bang a dude.
Right.
Well, I won't say no one, but almost no one.
Small crowd.
Everyone that isn't covered by Megan's Law.
Pornhub proves otherwise.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's no one wants that. And I think that's a miss by the filmmaker, the showrunners, to think that that's something that the people would want from this character, because it didn't do anything for her character.
The only thing it set up was her in the next episode basically saying to Gendry, he's like, dude, come on, that was a one-night thing. Marry
right, and
you
could have done that without boning.
Right, they could have. They could have.
You could have done that without boning. And honestly, it would have seemed like she was being less cruel and less whatever, and more just like... No, I don't want that.
Yeah, the
like,
other
have
thing
them have
too,
a more intimate moment than sex. Yeah. There are other intimate moments you can do besides boning.
Yeah.
But maybe the showrunners don't know that. Or maybe in Westeros it's not
allowed.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, then you have.
But I just thought it was a little odd. There's just like, no, I'm going to go sailing now.
What did you think about
all right, well, fair enough.
What did you think about the final scene for Tyrion and Bronn when they're basically back to bitching and moaning about money and you know, that, I thought that scene, that ending with the camera pulling back with the four or five of them at the table, you know, talking about how they're going to spend money. Is it going to be on ships or is it going to be on whorehouses? I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and I basically thought that was fine because that is literally what would happen.
Right.
Is once everything is settled, things would just sort of go into like, all right, well, now what are the dynamics of who's in charge and how is it going to proceed?
But Bronn won the lottery.
I thought it was a little too shticky. There's the earlier moment in that scene where they all are talking about, they all try to say, you know, long live the king or whatever that one, where they all don't say it at the same time.
Right, and Bronn says, work on that. And they're like, we'll get it better
next
time.
And it's like, yeah, and it's like, do one shtick or the other.
Right.
And I think that the talking about the whorehouses was a better shtick to go with. Mm. Keeps it all grounded. This isn't a sitcom.
Right.
Keep it within the tone of the show. A little bit of humor in dark times, but it's like a little too much humor in that. And then Sansa, who, by the way, is my least favorite character.
I hated her in the beginning, but she kind of was...
But let's take a moment, John, to think. If you watch, I don't know, have you watched the first season again?
I have not. I'm going to watch the whole series again now that it's over, though.
There's a compelling argument that all of the trouble, all of it, starts with her. Is because of her. All of the problems for the Stark family, including the beheading of Ned Stark, goes back to her.
Because of the Joffrey thing?
Yeah. Hmm. And Arya playing with that.
Right.
Fencing with that kid and then fencing with Joffrey.
Right.
And then Sansa throwing Arya under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
It all starts there. And I'm not saying that it wouldn't have gone, there are other things happened, blah, blah, blah.
It's all her fault.
An argument can be made. And here's a character who seemed to be one of the most witless people ever. And that's fine. There's witless people. The world needs witless people so that witful people can stand out. And then all of a sudden she's like, no, because I've been abused by these two men or three men or four men. And now I'm capable of running a country. And now I'm, and like, I just honestly like, or then her ratting out. John says, don't tell anyone this. Right. And she says, okay, cool. My dad was able to keep this secret for 30 years. I couldn't keep it a secret for 30
minutes.
Hours. Yeah. I got to go tell Tyrion. And then, by the way, all those people were slaughtered in King's Landing partially because of that scenario.
Hmm. Yeah.
Daenerys knowing that there was this potential threat to her throne with like that is on Sansa.
Mm-hmm. And I had no problem. Again, people that were screaming about the oh my God, she totally went against, you know, her purpose for the first, you know, seven seasons of this. I'm like, if you'd watched all along, she was always about revenge.
Oh yeah.
Always.
No, she was always about like burning everything to the ground.
Burning everything to the ground.
It was always her advisors who were like, let's try maybe a different route.
And she even earlier on, you know, Tyrion's pleading with her two episodes prior to not do that. And she's like, why should I not do it? Type of thing. You know, mercy, the whole thing about the mercy thing.
Right.
Like, and it was okay. So Cersei's going to use the people against her and pack them all into the, you know, the Red Keep. And then, you know, she'll never burn that down. It's like, well, yeah, you kind of set up that she will. And that was not a surprise. People were so shocked by that. I'm like, have you watched the whole thing? She's burning people up left and right throughout the whole. And they're, oh, but they're only bad guys. But she had no problem with it. And it was her first time back at the Red Keep. Her family built that thousands of years ago. And to have it all taken away by the Baratheons and the Lannisters. She's like, in that moment, she's like, screw them. And just, you know. She had nothing.
No,
none
I mean,
of
there's
her,
like this great symmetry, you know, like... you know, her her dad, Mad King, was killed in that room where she was killed. Mm-hmm. And like, there's some really clever storytelling things there. It's just my problem is you can do a better job of letting people know that she still has this weird darkness inside her than they did.
Well, they
because I wasn't surprised when it happened, but then like I'm also paying maybe a little bit better attention.
Yeah. As a storyteller,
you gotta kind of remind people like, hey, remember
this
is something. Sure. There's a darkness inside this person. There's a revenge thing inside this person.
I do find it interesting though that you know we watched something for 10 years, 8 seasons, 10 years. And people were like, you know, it went too fast, but yet we can suspend our disbelief for a 2.5 hour movie and fill in the blanks. And they did accelerate it. So the pacing was rapid compared to earlier seasons, but it still served the story and the characters. There was nothing that I saw that was so out of line that I would demand, you know, a recount.
Tonally, though, and this is my complaint, not enough people died. I don't mean enough faceless people.
Oh, the stars, right. I got you.
Not enough stars died.
Yeah.
Like, did you see they have the whole gathering there where they figure out who's going to be the king? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, easily a third of those people should be dead. I mean, just following the tone of the books and the tone of the earlier, it's just so TV writing to, like, keep everybody alive.
Right.
Keep everybody alive. Like, that way there can be sequels. That way there can be spinoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, that way we can have the next season and bring the whole cast back. And it's just like, have you ever noticed this about TV shows? Like, someone
they
works
leave
in
that open,
it's
yeah.
a it's an office place. It's an office place comedy, but like no one ever leaves the office. And literally, the show The Office. Like, people leave jobs.
Mm-hmm.
People change careers. People get better offers from other companies or need to move to Florida because their mom is having health problems or like whatever. And like, but in traditional television, like you just keep characters you keep all the characters because you don't want to mix, you don't want to mess things up. And like, you don't know if the audience likes this character more than the other one.
So the D&D need more money. Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, like, you just need to kill a few more people.
I thought there was a lot of death, but I was surprised that I thought for sure Tyrion wasn't going to make it. You know, that he was going to be somebody that could be, you know, that would be a gasp that everybody would be like, oh my God, my favorite character, you know. And
I love that character, but I will say, John, you have to admit, the last 3 years, he has become the most unsmart person.
Right. And like she said,
in Westeros,
you fail me one more time, it'll be your last. And it's like, well, I failed you like dozens of times. Thanks for the extra.
Is that it? When it's a baker's dozen, then that's her limit.
Right. But hey, how about that performance though by Peter Dinklage? That he sealed the Emmy award just with his performance in those two scenes. Fantastic acting.
Yeah,
it's really
good. No, he's spectacular, and. You know, I think he's one of those actors that makes other actors look better. Like, I don't think Kit Harington is a great actor, but in those scenes together.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah.
It's really good stuff. And I don't want to sound like I didn't like it. It was fine. Like, it was good. It was mostly a good conclusion to, you know, John as, you know, king beyond the wall or whatever. Right. Or not that he would necessarily be king.
Right.
Beyond the wall. But like, him going up there.
He was a good boy.
Yeah.
Who's a good boy?
Yeah, and he's where he set out to be when he first, or at least in the proximity of that.
Yeah.
It's a little too tidy for me from what I'd experienced with the show, but, you know, like, what can you really complain? Like,
It wasn't a dream.
Oh, I know, right?
It wasn't Samwell writing the book.
It was a vision from, the book thing. That was a whole other.
That was pretty bad.
That was, again, like too hacky, right? Yeah. Like too jokey joke. Like it's Game of Thrones.
Right.
It's
and also
so
Samwell
bad
saying,
you have to melt the throne with dragon fire.
The whole that was a little bit forced, too. So there's a couple of things that it seemed like in that final season they threw in that they didn't really need.
But again, they're not working off of the source material anymore. They're trying to wing it, and they just turn back into TV writers at that point.
Yeah, and there's so much.
But overall,
about it.
I think it's a great show. It is overall, and I think certainly the first 5 seasons are a real testament to like really good writing, really good acting, really good character developments. And again, less special effects, more
more the writing. And then Tyrion says that at the end, it's all about the stories.
Yeah.
The stories of the individuals, the interpersonal dynamics is what made that such a good show.
Yeah.
And this could be the longest
extra
innings ever, but well worth it.
You know what? We're going to take a couple weeks off. So,
that's true. Yeah. So we'll you guys get to rest up, formulate your own theories. Get back to us on
Get back to us. Check us out on Twitter. Go to at Dave Dumblefleas and what's your username? It's pornstar 42069, right? All right. At reply us on the interwebs, we'll get right back to you.
So what's coming up next?
Find out the results of the DNA test for the Orioles and Gleyber Torres on the next episode of Who's Your Daddy?